A lot of heart talks. I think it's the perfect fit after all. A quick note about the Kate Spade New York Foundation. Our mission is to empower women to transform our communities. And we give away about $1.2 million each and every year, regardless of how the business does, to nonprofits in three pillars: women in entrepreneurship, women in technology, and women in the arts. And we work with mostly low-income and underserved pockets of women. So we believe every woman, no matter what her background or where she comes from, deserves to find her passion, to find a trade or a career path, and not just a job. And see, Courtney, that's a good fit, right? That's pretty good. And we have grants working with refugee women through the International Rescue Committee. We have grants with Girls Who Code or Ghetto Film School, giving teenage girls an access point to technology or film and TV industries. And the mission of our brand is to empower women to lead their most interesting lives. And we have a lot of heart around our offices and the work we do, and we love bringing joy to people's lives. So that said, this is a talk about minimalism, and the only thing I can say about that is that if you're going to have a 33-piece wardrobe like Courtney talks about in her book, it's okay if a few of them are Kate Spade. You know, like, that's totally okay. And all kidding aside, I'd like to introduce the speaker for today, Courtney Carver. After a series of events in her life left her feeling powerless, she decided to take one small action and started a blog amidst the chaos called Be More With Less in 2010. Today, she is one of the top bloggers in the world on the subject of minimalism. She has been featured in countless articles, podcasts, and interviews on simplicity, and is the creator of the Minimalist Fashion Challenge, Project 333. She was featured in O, the Oprah magazine, and Real Simple. Most recently, she is the gentle warrior behind the spectacular book, Soulful Simplicity, How Living With Less Can Lead to So Much More. And with that, I'll turn it over to Courtney.
Thanks, Valerie. I actually have a Kate Spade dress in my wardrobe, and I wore it last night to an event. So I'm thrilled that you introduced me. Thank you. And thank you all for being here. I think it is so brave that you are here at a conference about growing and doing more and willing to sit in a room and talk about potentially doing less. Right? Thank you for being here. There's a couple of ideas that I want you to keep in mind as I move through the workshop today. One is that consistency is more important than intensity. So doing a little something every day is going to make a big difference. If you think you don't have time to change your life, you do. You can do it in 5 minutes a day. Also, very important to close the gap between inspiration and action. And I'm going to unpack that a little bit more as we move forward. And one more thing, and that is to be willing to have conversations that start with, wouldn't it be crazy if? Okay, wouldn't it be crazy if? So just keep that in mind. This talk is called Be More With Less, How to Make Space for What Matters Most. So in the spirit of closing the gap between inspiration and action, I want to start with an action step. So if you have pen and paper or a phone, tablet, other digital device, I'd like you to take part in this. And I'm not going to ask you to share, so please be as open as you possibly can. I want you to make two lists. On the first list, I want you to make a list of 1 to 10 items about what matters most to you in your life. What matters most? This could be anything from family members to work projects to passion projects to new ideas, interests, whatever matters most to you. I want you to put that on the list. And you can kind of add to it as we're moving forward. On the second list, which either can be below or next to, depending on what you're working with, I want you to make a list of how you spend your time. So over the past week or the past month or even year, What do you spend most of your time doing? And list maybe the top 5 to 10 activities. What gobbles up most of your time? And I know we could take a long time to work on these lists, but we're also a little crunched for time, so I want to keep things moving. But as you're making those lists, just consider how they align. Does one list support the other? And we're going to circle back towards the end. So I'm going to jump in with a story to share with you, and I want everyone to relax and really enjoy this time. This day is going to be hectic and crazy, and you're going to be meeting a billion people, or 6,500 people, which feels like a billion to me. So use this time to just relax, maybe take a deep breath, and just enjoy your time. So this story is about a summer morning, and it looks like a lot of my mornings look, although not in the winter because I live in Salt Lake City. So I could tell that light was flooding into my bedroom even before I opened my eyes. And I smiled with my eyes still closed, thinking about the day ahead. The day was all mine. I had no plans, no obligations, and I thought about how I might spend this time and space I created. I sat up slowly, stretched, got out of bed, got dressed, brushed my teeth, had a glass of water, and then I curled up for a few minutes with my notebook. And I wrote down about 3 pages of ideas and thoughts, things that had built up overnight. They weren't groundbreaking ideas, nothing that I wanted to ever share with anyone, but I just wanted to clear out the scar tissue that had built up overnight so I could make room for new ideas. From there, I brewed a cup of tea and meditated for 10 minutes. Stretched out on my yoga mat, and then I went for a walk. Long walk. This wasn't a calorie-burning walk or a walk where I was counting my steps, keeping track of every motion that I made. Instead, it was a joy walk. I was outside noticing my surroundings, what I saw, what I smelled, the people that walked by me, what I heard, what I felt. One time I even felt the warmth of the sun on my face, and I closed my eyes and I looked up and I said a silent prayer. I said, "Love me, energize me, fill me with light and grace." Sounds like an awesome morning, right? Yeah. Sounds like a good morning. For those of you who agree with that, thank you. You're much nicer than I would have been 10 years ago. And for those of you who didn't agree, you're probably a lot like I was. And if you had told me 10 years ago that you spent your morning praying in the sunshine while I was in the throes of my busy addiction, I would have rolled my eyes and thought, "Lady, get a job," right? I would have pretended to be annoyed and frustrated, but what I really would have been feeling is jealous. I would have been jealous because I didn't have time for those slow mornings I craved. Instead, I had to wake up, coffee up, get my daughter to school, rush to work, and then it was back-to-back emails, meetings, phone calls, clients, and then into the evening prepping for all those things the next day. I complained about my busyness, and I got completely high from it at the same time. I was a busy addict. Any busy addicts in the room? Okay, we're going to be all right, guys. I started rethinking my busy addiction one afternoon after a crazy day at work when I was driving my daughter home from school. We were going down the freeway, and she was sitting next to me telling me about her day, and I was checking my voicemail, returning email, crunching numbers, and every once in a while I would look over at her and say, "Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, that sounds good." I wanted her to know that I was there for her. But that was all I could give her in the midst of all that work and busyness I had, and the driving down the freeway. When I pulled in the garage, I was struck as I watched her get out of the car and walk towards the house with her backpack on, that I couldn't remember anything she said to me. Not only that, I couldn't remember driving home. I didn't remember the drive home. So not only did I miss a precious opportunity to connect with my child, I had risked our lives driving as distracted as I was, and everybody around me as well. I thought, as tears pooled in my eyes, about all of the rides home, all of the phone calls, and all of those missed moments. And it occurred to me that being in the car, picking her up from school, was different than actually being there for her. And it wasn't just in the car either. My phone was like a body part, right? I was always connected. It always came first. It always came before what I said mattered most to me. And I didn't know how that had happened, how my priorities had gotten so screwed up, and why I was so busy. I thought I was so busy because life demanded it, because the job demanded it, because everyone wanted something more from me all the time, more, 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 right? I didn't realize, or I started to realize, that that was the life I had chosen, the life I had created. In a Washington Post article, author and vulnerability researcher Brené Brown says, the scale of what we are expected to get, what we are expected to get done and how well we can do it is beyond human scale. Beyond human scale. I didn't really care about getting anything done well. I just wanted to get it done. I wanted to cross it off my list and then make a new list and cross more stuff off of that list. The day after I ignored my daughter in favor of my phone, I decided that that was it. I was going to ban my cell phone from my car and start showing up for the people that I love. And it feels like, because that was about, 9 or 10 years ago, that by now everyone would have banned their phones from the car. But I know, I've been in more than 50 cities in the past 2 years, and anytime I'm in the back of a Lyft, I can look around me and see people driving on their phones. So this has not gone away by any means. But I decided to ban my phone and really begin what I call my busy boycott. And guess what happened when I did this? Nobody noticed. I thought I was so freaking important, and nobody noticed. My boss didn't notice. My colleagues didn't notice. My clients didn't notice that I wasn't responding to email at the speed of light anymore. My sales went up. Like, how did this happen? But more important, my daughter started coming first, not just in my thoughts, but in my actions as well. So I wanted to share this story with you because I thought that you might be busy too. And like me, maybe from time to time you think you're missing your life. Simplifying my life is what helped me find my way back to health. It helped me find work that I truly care about. But best of all, it helped me find my way back to love. It gave me the space and time to show up for my life, to show up for the people that I love. And there are several things that I did to simplify my life, very specific things that I'm going to share with you today. So that you can implement these things in your own life. But before I do that, I want to tell you why I did it. Because why is always more important than how. We can always figure out the how. Like, Google knows how, right? She knows. Google knows, but we need to know what our why is so that our changes can stick. So up until 2006, I thought that I would always be overextended in every area of my life. There was never enough time, money, energy. All the people around me, they struggled too. We all wanted more, 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 more. I was exhausted, depleted, sick. I didn't feel well. I knew there had to be a better way, but I wasn't motivated enough to figure it out. And plus, I was too busy to add a new research project to my life. So I just kept going. Simplicity author Elaine St. James says, one of the reasons we keep our lives so complicated is so we won't have to listen to the inner voice that tells us how we can make our lives work better. That was so me. Every time I would hear that inner voice say, this isn't working, things have to change, I would make my life louder so that I didn't have to pay attention. That all changed in the spring of 2006 when my crazy busy life got even crazier. I was under crazy deadlines. I can't keep saying that word crazy because that's what it was. It was really crazy making. But lots of work deadlines. I had volunteered to chair the auction at my daughter's private school event. I was traveling internationally, and I was also training for the MS-150. It's a cycling event in Salt Lake City where I live to raise money for multiple sclerosis research. My boss at the time had MS. He had been in a wheelchair for years, and I wanted to ride for him. I was also doing 5,000 other things that we do on a day-to-day basis, and I got sick. What I thought was a little jet lag turned into a lot of vertigo. I had vertigo, I had debilitating fatigue, tingling in my hands, numbness in my face, and I had had all of these things before. All of these were part of my wake-up calls and inner voices that I had shut down, but they had happened one at a time, so I could brush them off, explain them away. Stress. Must be stress. I must be working too hard. And then what would I do? Work harder, so I didn't have to listen. 2 months later, after countless visits to neurologists and brain scans and other testing, I had missed the MS ride and was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis myself. This was my enough is enough moment, the wake-up call that I could not ignore anymore. I had to listen. My neurologist told me that after reviewing the scans and our visit together, that I was standing on the edge of a cliff, and that if I didn't change my ways, I was going to fall off. And he didn't say it in a way to scare me. He said it like, this is the truth. This is what's going to happen. So I thought about what I could do to live well with MS. And after doing much research, I decided that I was going to eliminate as much stress as possible from my life. No big deal, right? Just eliminate stress. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew that I wanted to be healthy for myself and for my family. Little did I know that by simplifying my life, I wouldn't just live well with MS, but I would change my entire life. The changes I made didn't happen overnight, and some of them I'm still working on. But many of them made a difference right away, and I am going to share those with you. And in an effort to help you close the gap between inspiration and action, along with these big changes, I'm going to share some tiny micro actions so that you can put them into place in your own life. Because I'd love for you to be able to leave here today and before you even wake up tomorrow morning, have implemented a change that resonates with you, something that inspires you. Because I think on most days, we're over-inspired, right? We are. I mean, between inspirational quotes about how amazing our day should be, our social feeds, new business ideas, great stories, we are just hyper-inspired. And instead of choosing something, we're just tired. So we wait. And as we wait, that inspiration dwindles. So we have to close the gap. And that's why I'll share these micro actions. So the number one thing I recommend doing, if you want to simplify your life, start to get closer to what matters to you, is to start a morning routine. Start a meaningful morning practice. Shortly after my diagnosis, I took a yoga class, and I loved the way I felt after the class. And I wanted to figure out how I could feel that way without taking a full yoga class because I didn't have time to go to yoga. So I started practicing 5 minutes of yoga in the morning. And this was a big shift for me because my other morning routine was snooze button, snooze button, snooze button. And then like, why am I late? I can't believe I'm late. So I traded one snooze button for 5 minutes of yoga. And I did that for a week and it worked. I felt something. I didn't know what it was, but it was something. And so the next week, I added 5 minutes of something else I loved, which is writing. So I did 5 minutes of yoga, 5 minutes of writing. And the next week, I added 5 minutes of meditation. I had a 15-minute routine of things that I really loved and things I wanted to do more of, but I knew if I did my, you know, go big or go home approach that I would burn out and forget about it. So I stuck with the three activities, and I habit stacked them, one on top of the other. And then I started stacking on minutes, 1 minute per activity per week. Only 1 minute, guys. I mean, that sounds like nothing. But after 7 or 8 weeks, I haven't done the math, I had a 30-minute routine. A 30-minute routine of activities that not only fueled me in the morning, but stayed with me all day long so that I could underreact, so that I could pause, so that I could go back to how I felt when I was practicing, even when my life was completely out of hand during the day, which it still was. So for you, for a micro action to start, there's two things that you can do. One is right now you could write down one activity that you might look forward to waking up to. So whether that be writing, yoga, meditation, reading, walking, yoga, any of those things. Because today I practice my routine 2 to 3 hours a day. And not every day, like today, for instance. I didn't have 2 or 3 hours. I didn't want to wake up at 4:30 in the morning. So I practiced for 5 minutes, which goes back to consistency is more important than intensity. 5 minutes wasn't a big routine for me this morning, but it kept me connected to the routine. So write down your one activity, and then the next micro step you could take is if you're interested, if you think this will help you, tomorrow morning, commit to 5 minutes of that activity. No matter where you are, what you're doing, 5 minutes. I know you guys have 5 minutes. You can find it. All right, so number two, make under your closet. Everyone's like, I gotta go. Make under your closet. Dress with less. We are making so many decisions about what we wear on a daily basis. It's no wonder we're exhausted midday. Even if we don't really care about fashion, right? So what are we gonna wear? What's on sale? Where can I get the best points? Who has a 2-for-1? If this is good, should I buy 5 in different colors? And then we end up wearing the same things anyway. So remove the excess, the stuff that you're not wearing. I recommend the minimalist fashion challenge I created called Project 333 in 2010. You can find all the rules online by Googling Project 333. Tens of thousands of people around the world have taken this challenge with great success. Very quickly, I'll tell you, it's 33 items that you choose, including clothes, accessories, jewelry, and shoes. Come on, you guys don't need winter boots here. You'll be fine. So what doesn't count, underwear, sleepwear, workout clothes don't count, but your workout clothes have to work out. You know what I'm talking about. Workout clothes have to work out, or you count them in your 33 items. And then you put the other stuff away for 3 months. Don't give it away. Just get it out of sight. Forget about it. And then go back to it in 3 months and see how you feel. So what could we do for a micro action for those of you who are like, not me on this? Because it takes some considering. Some wouldn't it be crazy if. The benefits go far beyond clothes and fashion. You have more time in the morning. You end up looking better. And you have much more energy, less decision fatigue. You start to have more time, money, attention for what matters to you. But if it's not the right time to start Project 333, maybe a micro step would be to research it. Just take a look and consider it. And then the second thing that you could do is remove anything from your wardrobe that makes you sad or mad. I know there are emotions in the closet. Like, I've talked to a lot of people about this. Here are some of the things that might make you sad or mad. Clothes that you have spent way too much on and the price tag is still hanging on it. Clothes that you said you would wear more than once, you don't. You only wore it for that one thing. Clothes that don't fit you, but you say every day that they will, right? And maybe clothes that someone gave you who they make you mad. Like, if they're gone, so can the clothes be gone. So that might be ways to start. All right, number three, let's move on. So we've got morning routine, and I don't expect you to put all of these into your life today. I know, I can tell, overachievers all over the place in here. One little thing. So we've got morning routine, make under your closet, and then the next thing I recommend is to unplug. And I know that is going to be a hard one here. But we need some time away from our digital devices. We have to take a break. And whether that be the morning, you know, maybe you do your morning routine before you check your phone. Maybe you serve yourself before you serve your inbox. Something to consider. Digital sabbaticals, I think, are very important. Does anyone's companies recommend that? No? Okay. Sounds like job security for me, right? I've got some work to do. Unplug for an hour a day where you don't even see your device, if possible. And if you can find a way to unplug for 24 hours a week, one full day, it will change the way that you reapproach your work. Because here's what happens when you break up with your phone for a full day. For the first 2 or 3 hours, you are in a panic. Like, what's happening in there? Like, I know things, like the world's falling apart and I'm not gonna know about it. People aren't gonna be able to get me. And then you calm down and your day is great. And the next morning, when it's time to turn your phone on, you won't want to. It happens that fast. So what are some micro actions we can take? Maybe we're not quite ready to unplug, but maybe you can slowly break up. One thing I recommend is putting a rubber band or a hair elastic on your phone right in the middle so that you can't do this mindless swiping business, right? Because we're like, oh, I'm just going to check the time. And then an hour later, you've been doing this and you don't even know what you looked at, right? So rubber band on the phone will help you from swiping. And then the second micro action would be to choose a day where you can unplug for the whole day. And hopefully your family can do it with you. Tell them the internet's broken all day long. And everything will be okay. The internet will be there when you get back. All right, step number 4 is to declutter. Declutter your home. Declutter your digital devices. And declutter your mind space whenever possible. I think it's easiest to start with home. With the stuff around you, get rid of the stuff that doesn't matter to you. And there's a ton of it. If you're not ready to get rid of it all the way, hide it. This works. If you hide it and forget what it was, it never added value to your life. Or if it did, it's finished. And you can let it go. And this works for your loved ones as well. If you want to help them on their journey without nagging or trying to convince them. We had in our bedroom, after we had decluttered to the point where we had empty rooms in our house, in our bedroom, we had 3 pieces of decor left. And it was 3 vases with a little pretty flower in each. Very nice. Beautiful. All I ever did was dust them and knock them over. And so one day, I boxed them up and put them in the garage. And I forgot about them. And then maybe 6 months later, I remembered. And I brought them back in the house, and I set them up. My husband got home from work. I said, I think I'm going to donate these. And he said, no, I love those. I love those. And I said, well, they haven't been in the house for 6 months. And so he laughed and said that we could get rid of them. Now, this has come around where every time I travel, I come home, and he welcomes me home, and he says, I just want to let you know I've hidden something. And if you can guess what it is, you can keep it. So in terms of decluttering, your micro action is to put a box in front of your door or the place where things go in and out of your house and start dropping things in it. Things that don't matter to you, things that you bring home. I mean, I haven't been through the conference bags. I'm sure there's lovely things in it, but there's probably also things you don't want or need. Drop them in the box. And don't tell them I said that, please. Start letting things go that are getting in the way of your life. What's removing you from your life? It can be the clutter. It might be the stuff. That might be a distraction. Shopping for it, taking care of it, thinking about it, it all could be contributing. And the last thing that I'm going to recommend, even though I could tell you 50 more things, I only want to give you 5, the last thing is to start saying no. start saying no. I know this is a hard one. I put a whole chapter in the book called The Art of Knowing, N-O-I-N-G, because I know we need tips for saying no. I mean, people keep asking us to do things. There's a saying that goes something like, if you want to get things done, ask a busy person. You might be the busy person if people keep coming to you, so keep that in mind. There's an author named Derek Sivers. Do you guys know who he is? Anyone? I saw a couple hands. His website is sivers.org, I believe. Wonderful writer. But he has this great philosophy when it comes to saying yes and saying no. And he calls it the hell yeah method. Actually, he calls it the F yeah method, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. So we're going to go with the hell yeah method today. When you're considering something, if it's not a hell yeah, it's a no. So be really excited about it, because you'll better serve the person that is asking or the project that is asking, and it will be healthier for you. I also say, I will not say yes if my heart says no. So when somebody asked me to do something, I could see as I was saying yes that my shoulders were tightening up, my heart was racing, like my body was saying, say no for the love of God, and their yes was coming out of my mouth. So if your heart says no, your mouth can say no as well. If you are thinking about putting some of these ideas into action, if you're considering, wouldn't it be crazy if I simplified my life? Know that you can start small, and it doesn't matter where you start, because any of these big changes will be the combination of hundreds, if not thousands, of small changes, and they all count. Every one of these tiny steps that you'll take will count. So it doesn't matter where you start. I guess the one thing that I would recommend and will close with is that it's so important to carve out a little time for yourself every day without the devices, even without the people that you love, to think about what matters most to you. Let's come back to the list for a minute. So you've got your list of what matters most, right? And we've got the other list, how I spend my time. And maybe you've been thinking about how some of these ideas might help you better align those two lists. But another thing that will help is let's rename those lists, okay? So the list called what matters most, let's call that the life I want. And then how I spend my time is the life I'm living, the life I created. And then use closing the gap between inspiration and action to move closer to the life you want. Remove everything that doesn't matter to you so you finally have the time and space for what does. Thank you so much.
I told you. Okay, so we're going to open it up for questions. So you can begin lining up at the microphones, but I'll kick it off with a question while we wait for people to feel brave enough to come up.
And let me just add quick that you can ask anything about what we talked about today, questions about simplicity, minimalism, my experience, your experience. I am literally an open book now, so whatever you have for me, I'm happy to help.
I'm going to kick it off with a couple of questions asking for a friend. So you talk a lot about being an introvert. And, you know, personally, I'm also an extroverted introvert, right? Like, I've been forced to become an extrovert based on what I want to do in life. And how do you rectify the idea of, I am an introvert naturally, but I want to pursue something that may require me to be something that I am not? I wonder if you could talk about that.
Sure. So if anyone's willing to share, how many introverts in the room, in the house? Yes. Wow. All right. I know I won't see you at the networking events later. I used to work as a regional ad director for luxury magazines, so I was constantly on and having to be extroverted in events and meetings, whatever. And I didn't know I was an introvert. I thought because I was really good at doing that I was an extrovert. And I couldn't figure out why I just wanted to cry before every meeting and after every event. I was so exhausted. And for me, I had to start looking for work, in different work for sure, toning down and becoming more me than I was at these things. So I don't know. I mean, if you want to do work that requires you to be an extrovert, I say work with a great team that has extroverts on it. Mm-hmm. We're both married to extroverts. Yeah. So that helps me out quite a bit in social situations. But with work, if you are an introvert and you are having to be on at work, you even more need time for yourself. You need time to go in. And even the extroverts do, but the introverts more. You need time to be away from people. When I was in the main ballroom with the 6,500 people, I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Just keep coming back to your heart, to who you are. Know yourself. And if you need some time, you need to leave early. You need to not be on. Because if you're on all day and you don't like that, you're not going to be on at home. You're not going to be able to give that to your family, to the people that are on that what matters list. And I'm guessing there's people on that list. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is that on? Okay. thank you. I really like the ideas. One thing that I want to ask in terms of the morning routine is, when you try to do this, often there are just things that'll be coming up. You have kids or whatever, there might be some crisis, somebody's got the flu, whatever it is. I'm wondering kind of how you keep the momentum going through those crisis points, whether it's with other family members needing something or what it is, how you really get to continue to do that in the midst of life happening.
Great question. How do you have a morning routine when people need you and emergencies come up and life happens? One is that before this even starts, you tell your family members what you're planning for your morning routine and you ask for their help. I know that doesn't prevent the flu, but it prevents the, hey mom, can I ask you a quick question? Tell them why you need this time. It might mean waking up before they do. But when these things come up, like the flu, or for me when I'm traveling and I don't have the space to do it, I might do it later in the day for a shorter amount of time. I keep coming back to that consistency is more important than intensity. So as long as I can do it a little bit each day, I know it will grow. I know I will keep the momentum, and I know that it will continue to be on my what matters list.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, thank you. In telling people no or saying no, the issue that I've found is that there are some people I care about very much personal to me, that when I say no, I can't spend this time right now, they take it personally, as if all this other is more important than they are. How do I explain politely that that's not the case, but that I'm going to break if I put any more on my plate?
I don't think you need to explain. I think that they're going to get the picture eventually. And when I say no to someone who I know is particularly sensitive that's in my life, I'll say, I love you so much, but it's a no. I love you so much. And then I smile and I hug them and we get on with it. And the more I do that, the more they start to understand and even start to be inspired that I'm taking care of myself, because they know that in their moment of need, I will be there for them. But I'm not going to be able to if I run myself ragged baking brownies for the bake sale or doing things that are not on my what matters list. I love you so much. And if it is a good friend, maybe you explain why, that you really are trying to take better care of yourself and you are simply overextended. But when you come up for air and you feel better, they're the first person that you're going to go back to see how you can help.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I wanted to ask if you have any suggestions on how to minimize or refuse social engagements on the weekend. I find I'm running from one kid's birthday party to the other, and I don't know how to politely decline without, you know, offending the parents and not having them come to my own kid's birthday. So it's hard because I'm booked out 6 weeks, and I have to kind of like keep it all sorted out and organized and my weekends are more stressful than the weekdays.
Wow. Okay. So staying in is the new going out. I'm hearing that from a lot of people. It's definitely been my own experience, but it is more challenging when it's not your social activities, it's your children's. Still, I think you have to build in some family time. I'm sure on your what matters most list, that came before birthday parties, right? I'm thinking. So perhaps you could show up for a short time. Or if you had a close group of women who all have kids and are doing the birthday party thing, have a great chat about this, because I guarantee that you're not the only one in that group feeling like that. They don't want to go to your kid's birthday party either, but they don't want you to not go to their birthday party. Like, can we have two birthday parties together? Surely some of these kids have birthdays around the same time. I think if you're willing to have the conversation and say, wouldn't it be crazy if we had like a group birthday party, we could all get our Saturdays back.
Thank you.
Try that.
Hi, Courtney. I'm Carolyn. And first, I want to thank you for Project Re 33. This is an outfit from that
project.
You look
amazing.
Yeah. Second, I wanted to ask you, for those five things that you suggested, what if, for example, decluttering is your goal, however you live with people whose goal is to clutter the house?
Okay, so you live with a hoarder, and no, it's challenging because we're not always on the same page at the same time when it comes to making a change. First and foremost, I would request a sanctuary space, a clutter-free space in your home where you know everyone's not ready to go, but this countertop is yours and nothing goes on it. Never, ever, ever. Or you're going to start removing things from other areas. I'm laying down the law on that. And it might be your nightstand or your office, some place that is a clutter-free sanctuary for you so you can be reminded that someday your whole house is going to look like this and feel like this. The other thing I'm doing is I'm having conversations not about the mechanics or the chores, like, hey, let's clean out the garage this weekend, honey, but the why. Why are we doing this? Wouldn't it be crazy if we could sell this house? Wouldn't it be crazy if one of us could quit our jobs? These are the conversations we had. Wouldn't it be crazy if we downsized? Look beyond decluttering and what that may deliver. The other thing that's really helpful if we're talking especially about a spouse is let them hear it from someone else. So they don't always want the message from us. I remember going to a meetup with these two guys called The Minimalists. And they have a blog called TheMinimalist.com. Some people know them. Yeah, they're amazing. They're great friends of mine. But when I was first getting to know them, my husband and I went to a meetup with them. This was probably in 2011. So 5 years that we've been changing our lives. And we meet them and we talk and they talk all about their simplifying efforts. And afterwards we're driving home and my husband's like, that's a great idea. I'm like, really? What do you think we've been doing for the last 5 years? So let them hear it from someone else. Send an article, let them listen to a TED Talk, and be inspired on their own, and then get back to the why as a family. It's going to be helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
So kind of going back to the idea of decluttering, especially like your closet. So I really like the idea of being very minimalistic, but at the same time, I really value and care a lot about self-expression and keeping up with like new fashion trends. So how do you balance both of those ideas?
This is good. I need this, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm talking to someone at Kate Spade about fashion. I'm like,
clearing her closet. That's
very, very good question. And there's several sides to this. So sometimes people ask me this from a place of, I love shopping, I love fashion, when in reality, they don't really know what they love. They've been so focused on this thing that they haven't taken the time to consider other things. And the closet's such an easy place to put our focus. However, if it is someplace that you really genuinely care about, consider that less is not nothing, right? But I have found that by downsizing my wardrobe and simplifying my color palette, being less creative in my closet, I'm able to be way more creative in every area of my life. And for me, that worked out really well because, as it turns out, I didn't love fashion or shopping. I loved easing the pain with fashion and shopping. So the pain of working a job I didn't enjoy, the pain of disappointment, you know, the pain of a breakup, let's go shopping and shut that shit down, right? But again, if this is a career for you or something that you're very interested in, just be considering that. Like, how can I integrate this into my life where I'm expressing myself, but I don't have to have all the things? It doesn't mean nothing. Perhaps you're wearing a 33-piece capsule collection. I mean, I think that is an awesome way to express your creativity and get really creative. How can I make these pieces work? And have nobody notice, which honestly they really don't. Like, nobody cares what I'm wearing, I've discovered. Just think about it in terms of that. Is it adding value to your life to be creative in your closet? And if it is, keep doing it by all means. And then maybe there's another area of your life that you'd prefer to simplify.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I just add that a lot of the designers at Kate Spade were all Black? Right? Like, they're the ones coming up with these crazy patterns and concoctions, and like, and then they come in with like all black and a red lip. And you're like, huh.
And
so
they look
not,
amazing.
Yeah, and they're not making any of those choices in the morning.
So. Yeah, I did this thing called the Tiny Wardrobe Tour where I visited 33 cities with my 33 pieces. And this woman stood up and she, and I was wearing all black that day. I got colorful for you guys today. But she said, isn't it boring to wear all black? And I looked at her and I said, will you please come up and ask me standing next to me? She was in all black. Oh, want to go over here? Or?
So I get caught up in the busyness at work. I'm kind of the go-to person and I'm an extrovert. So I can't focus on the projects, can't focus on the bigger things because I'm all caught up in all the smaller stuff. So from a work-related point of view, how can I kind of apply some of these things to my work environment so I can work on the bigger projects as I'm getting bogged down in the dailies?
I would do the two lists that we talked about today for specifically for work. What matters most and where am I spending all my time? And then find out what on that list of where am I spending all my time that you can give to someone else, completely cut out, or figure out how to do in a better way so that those two things are more aligned. Okay. I have a feeling you're going to have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's
okay,
that's
thank
it.
You.
Yeah. Sure.
Hi. So I discovered you on the internet about 3 years ago. I love the idea of the 33 pieces. And I cleared out my closet a lot. I just couldn't get to sticking with 33 pieces, especially with the accessories and the jewelry. I mean, like, I'm wearing two bracelets right now. So I kind of have a three-part question. First of all, why 33 pieces? You know, like, how far can we stretch that? That's number one. Number two, how often do you switch it in and out? Like, is it seasonal? And so then do I have, like, 33 times four? Or like, do you switch some pieces in and out each season?
Yep.
And then finally, the thing I struggle with is ironing my clothes. So sometimes I have these amazing pieces that I really love, but, you know, just finding the time to, like, keep them looking nice. So any practical tips that you could share with that?
Okay, quickly, 33 items doesn't have to be 33. Maybe your number is 37 or 45. It's probably not 133. Like, see what it is. Get it on paper. But be willing to let go of the accessories and the jewelry for 3 months. It's only 3 months. And see how you feel at the end of that. Say, wouldn't it be crazy if I didn't wear jewelry for 3 months? Like, really, what's going to happen? Nothing bad, I promise. And then, yes, every 3 months I switch out, but I don't have 33 new items every 3 months. That would kind of defeat the whole purpose of shopping less, for starters. So I rotate usually about 50% of the stuff from one season into the next. Here you could probably get away with even more than that. But yeah, I switch it out every 3 months and let go of stuff that's not working. And when you're only wearing 33 items, you know very quickly what works and what doesn't. And in terms of ironing, I can't help you. I hate ironing, so I wear stuff that I don't have to iron. Typically, I have maybe two things, or if I travel, I'll pull out the hotel ironing board and iron and pray that somebody hadn't ironed something weird the day before that's going to get on my clothes. But I don't, like, if you ask me where my iron is at home, I'm not going to know. And I don't have a lot of stuff.
Thank you.
Last question.
Okay, last question.
Hi. So it's kind of been hitting me the past couple of months, and your question about unplugging your phone. And I literally sat there while you were saying, I was like, okay, when can I do that? And I realized in the morning I wake up and I listen to podcasts to get my mind going. And then I get to work, or I'm on the bus to work, and I go through my personal emails to get rid of those. And then when I get to work, I'm either listening to music or audiobooks. And then when I get on the bus back home, I'm back on personal emails. And then when I get home and I'm meal prepping and I'm putting away laundry or something, TV's in the background. I basically, to keep my mind going, or like to not be, because cooking, meal prepping is boring to me, I guess what would you say to someone like me who has something going on at all times to kind of keep me awake in the morning or concentrating on something else besides just folding laundry?
Yeah, I'd like to suggest that all of those things are probably really great resources, but they're removing you from your life because you don't get to have a thought of your own. All you're doing is listening to all these other voices and channels and things. So what I'm going to recommend, and I go into great detail about this in the book, but taking 5 minutes a day, maybe it's before the podcast in the morning, and sitting quietly, nothing, and put your hands on your heart, both of them. Just put your hands on your heart and don't expect anything. Expect actually to be bothered because your mind has just been dying to talk to you. But so is your heart, and you're just drowning it out because of all of those other voices. And we all do it. I mean, no judgment or shame. I do the same thing. Pull back 5 minutes a day, sit down, and put your hands on your heart. You're going to learn so much about yourself and what you really want and need in your life.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I just want to thank everyone for coming today. Thank you to Courtney for an amazing session. And she will be in the exhibit hall signing copies of her book, which is available at the bookstore in the exhibit hall, Soulful Simplicity. And you know it's a good book when you read the acknowledgments, right? Like, that's like, you don't want it to end. So thank you again, Courtney. Yeah.